Today's broadcast was originally recorded on January 22nd, 2026.
How scared are Republicans of talking about the Epstein files? They're so scared that they literally are calling Jack Smith. Republicans would rather talk about the criminality of Donald Trump trying to steal an election and trying to stop the peaceful transfer of power, and the criminality of Donald Trump in stealing classified documents, obstructing justice, than about Donald Trump's associations with Jeffrey Epstein and his pedophilia ring.
Well, that is a good point, Congressman Ted Lieu. They'd rather talk about that than Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Things are rough.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on a whole bunch of other fine affiliate stations that I don't have time to list since we've got so much to get to today on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. Welcome to the Bradcast. We have been buried around here at Brad Blog World News headquarters all day long, covering former special counsel Jack Smith's 5 hours of public testimony all day on Thursday before the House Judiciary Committee regarding his report on, well, one anyway, of his two criminal indictments of Donald J. Trump, the one regarding his attempted theft of the 2020 election and incitement of the attempted insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, as part of that alleged conspiracy. You may recall that Jack Smith testified previously to this very same committee chaired by Ohio Republican Jim Jordan about the same matter before the holidays, I think it was.
Yes, December 17.
But that testimony was done behind closed doors for the first time in special counsel history. And despite the request of Jack Smith and the Democratic members of that committee who sought public testimony, as has been the case with all prior special counsel investigations of an American president. But for some reason, they wanted to keep Jack Smith locked up behind closed doors. Republicans apparently eventually relented and allowed that public testimony to happen, in fact, on Thursday. We'll be talking about it with our guest momentarily, along with some other news that broke late last night regarding a bizarre and disturbing secret memo to all members of ICE, as revealed by a whistleblower regarding a directive allowing ICE officials to break into the homes of Americans without a judicial warrant, in apparent contradiction of the law and decades of Supreme Court precedent, in order to obtain what they believe to be unlawful migrants. It's a very disturbing development, made more so by the fact that the memo said to be to all ICE agents has actually not been distributed to all ICE agents, but to only a few of them who have then reportedly shown it personally to ICE recruits, those in training, without allowing them to actually retain a copy of that memo. That's weird. Why would they do that? Well, we will get to that with our guest today as well, and hopefully, as time allows, our latest Green News Report with the delightful Desiree Doyen. Hello, Desiree.
Hey.
Long day, huh?
Yes.
But let's start with the Jack Smith testimony on Thursday, where, as AP describes it this afternoon, the former DOJ special counsel defended his investigations of Donald Trump, insisting that he had acted without regard to politics and had no second thoughts about the criminal charges that he brought. Quote, no one should be above the law in our country, and the law required that he be held to account. So that is what I did, said Smith about Trump. The hours-long hearing immediately split along partisan lines, you'll be shocked to know, as Republican lawmakers attempted to undermine the former Justice Department official while Democrats tried to elicit damaging testimony about Trump's conduct and accuse their GOP counterparts of attempting to rewrite history. Quote, "It was always about politics," insisted committee chair Jim Jordan in his opening remarks. He is the committee's Republican chair. Quote, "Maybe for them," retorted Congressman Jamie Raskin. He's the panel's top Democrat during his own opening statement, adding, "But for the rest of us, it's about the rule of law." Donald Trump was watching the proceedings, or at least pretending to, as he traveled back from his embarrassing and or bizarre appearance at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland this week, where he apparently decided that he didn't want to attack Greenland after all or institute new taxes on goods imported from our European allies who opposed his intent to take over Greenland. That after Trump saw the stock market tanking for 2 days this week in the wake of his threats against our NATO allies. Writing on his failing social media website on the way home from Davos, Trump said, quote, "Deranged Jack Smith is being decimated before Congress. Jack Smith is a deranged animal who shouldn't be allowed to practice law. If he were a Republican, his license would be taken away from him, and far worse." Far worse? Hopefully, says Trump, "the attorney general is looking at what he's done, including some of the crooked and corrupt witnesses that he was attempting to use in his case against me." Now, for the record, as Smith pointed out again in his testimony on Thursday, the entire case against Trump regarding his attempt to steal the 2020 election was actually based on testimony from Republican witnesses, many of them close to the president. Though Trump concluded his tweet, quote, "The whole thing was a Democrat scam. A big price should be paid by them for what they have put our country through." For what they have put our country through. Is that right, Mr. President? In other words, amid a hearing in which Republicans were accusing Jack Smith of having participated in a weaponized DOJ attack against a political foe, Donald Trump was encouraging his attorney general at the DOJ to go after his political foe. Crazy, isn't it? Of course, it's hardly the first time Trump has gone after Jack Smith, who one Democratic committee member noted on Thursday that Trump has called Smith deranged more than 180 times over the years on his social media site. Perhaps it was just me, but during his 5 hours of testimony before the committee, Jack Smith came across as anything but deranged or partisan. As he told lawmakers that he stood behind his decisions as special counsel to bring the charges against Trump in separate cases that accused the Republican of a broad, wide-ranging conspiracy to steal the 2020 election after he lost to Democrat Joe Biden in the one case, and unlawfully hoarded classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Palm Beach after he left the White House, though with that case still sealed by Trump-appointed Florida Judge Eileen Cannon, Smith was unable to speak about that second case almost at all. Said Smith during his opening remarks, I believe, he said, quote, "Our investigation developed proof beyond a reasonable doubt that President Trump engaged in criminal activity."
If asked whether to prosecute a former president based on the same facts today, I would do so regardless of whether that president was a Democrat or a Republican. No one should be above the law in this country, and the law required that he be held to account, so that is what I did. To have done otherwise on the facts of these cases would have been to shirk my duties as a prosecutor and as a public servant, of which I had no intention of doing.
Wow. Sounds deranged. In response, Republicans attempted to claim some sort of nefarious behavior by Smith for having secretly subpoenaed telephone toll records of a number of Republican members of Congress after it was discovered that Trump had called them, or vice versa, amid the attack on the U.S. Capitol. And they otherwise charged that Smith's investigation and eventual indictments were partisan affairs meant only to harm the chances of Donald Trump winning the 2024 presidential election. For his part, Smith repeatedly confirmed that his investigation was wholly independent, separate from partisan politics, that he had never had contact about the probe with Joe Biden or the White House or even from Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland regarding whether or not to file charges. Here's just one exchange from Thursday's hearing with questioning from Democratic Congresswoman Mary Gay Scanlon of Pennsylvania, one of the battleground states that Trump lost but lied endlessly about after 2020.
In your report and deposition, you detailed the overwhelming evidence that Trump had lost Pennsylvania, and he knew it. Despite this, he and his co-conspirators continued to make false statements about that result to advance their criminal plan. Can you describe the evidence that these were false claims and they knew they were false, including statements by election officials, court cases, and conversations between Trump and his Republican allies in the state?
Sure. What springs to mind most immediately is I recall one particular claim that there were more votes than ballots than had been sent out. This was a claim that was obviously false because many in even in the campaign knew that the reason for that discrepancy is we were talking about two different elections. One was the primary and one was the general election. My team interviewed Rudy Giuliani regarding that claim, and he admitted it was wrong. Mm-hmm. He admitted flat out that that was a mistake. And so that's one of several. With respect to witnesses in Pennsylvania, what springs to mind is the chair of the Republican Party, I believe, in Pennsylvania. This is relatively early, shortly after the election, had informed Donald Trump that the idea that fraud was the reason was not accurate. It was because of the counting of mail-in ballots, which was totally normal in this process. And again, this is someone who is a Republican who supported Donald Trump, wanted him to win. I submit he would have been a credible witness at trial.
And I mean, a second part of this, in addition to making false claims about election results that they knew were false, and your deposition and report go into this in some detail, there was also this fraudulent elector plan where Trump and his co-conspirators solicited folks who had been planning to be Trump electors if he won and asking them to submit fake certificates to Congress. And I think what you found was pretty remarkable, including a former congressman who told the co-conspirators that this was illegal and it was an attempt to overturn the government. Is that right?
That's correct. That particular elector who was signed up to be a legitimate elector, had Donald Trump in fact won the election, was a former U.S. attorney and former member of this Congress.
I mean, the bottom line is that despite the facts and over objections from his allies, Trump still went to the Ellipse on January 6th and lied about Pennsylvania's votes to direct his angry mob to attack the Capitol.
So, yeah, wow. Witnesses like Rudy Giuliani, the chair of the Republican Party of Pennsylvania, a former congressman from Pennsylvania, Republican congressman and Republican elector from Pennsylvania. Those were to be the witnesses in Jack Smith's case. Sounds very partisan. In favor of Republicans, perhaps. Anyway, joining us now to try to make some sense out of Thursday's hearing with Jack Smith in the U.S. House, which just wrapped up late today, along with Desi Doyen, who I suspect may have some thoughts about it as well along the way, we will see, is former lifelong Republican and attorney, now frequent contributor to the Progressive Daily Coast, where he writes as Keith DB, our old friend Keith Barber. Welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you, Brad. Good to be back.
Good to have you here. I know you slogged through much of the Smith testimony today out there, as we did back here. And I want to go through about three or four main points that Republicans on the committee attempted to use somehow to try and dirty up Smith, to try and, you know, tear down his case somehow against Trump regarding the attempt to steal the 2020 election. But before we get into the weeds there, Keith, what was your overall takeaway on what happened in the House Judiciary Committee on Thursday and on Smith's response to, you know, hours of often pretty hostile questioning under oath, at least from the Republicans?
Well, I think that clip from Representative Scanlon that you just played was very illustrative of how this went. Because if you'll notice, Representative Scanlon let Smith talk. The Republicans, by and large, for the most part, didn't do that. They would ask him a question. Well, first they would, you know, give a very long speech, and they might end it with a question. And before he could even start to answer, they would interrupt him and continue with their speech again. And that was the pattern throughout this. The Democrats, some of them did do some speechifying, as I call it, but they were much more willing to let Smith address and answer the question because they realized that his answers were the best thing for the American people to hear. And the Republicans were obviously afraid to let Smith speak, and that was reflected in them not letting him speak. That was kind of my takeaway.
You know, usually when Donald Trump comes up with a nickname for someone, for an enemy of his, or an attack on them, it has some relation to reality. The fact that he's calling Jack Smith deranged, I mean, and Desi, I'd like your thoughts as well. Does this guy come across as deranged in any part of what you guys all saw for the past five hours today?
No, of course not. But that's not the point. The point is, as you mentioned, for Republicans to dirty him up and get their clips for Fox News so that they can pretend like, you know, they actually did something when all they really did was be impervious to facts. Even those who are themselves former prosecutors and know what they are saying is false. Those people got their little Fox News clips, and they will continue to malign Jack Smith, even though the facts are not in their favor.
So no derangement there, as far as you could tell, Keith Barber?
Absolutely not. Smith was level-headed throughout the whole thing. And let's talk about probably the biggest single Republican gripe, and it had nothing to do with whether or not Trump was guilty or not. They never wanted to talk about that. But no, it was their petty grievance that Jack Smith, quote, spied on them by getting phone records that had no contact or, you know, context in them. They didn't include what was said in the call, just the fact that a call occurred between two people at a certain time.
And let me actually clarify, they're not actually phone records. They call them toll records. So explain how a toll record, and Smith was subpoenaing them, just to be clear, from members of Congress who are, you know, supposedly immune from, well, any sort of investigation for what they do in their official capacity as members of Congress under the Constitution's speech and debate clause. But they're claiming that the fact that they were subpoenaing these records only from Republicans, and they were toll records, I guess, in the days just before and just after January 6th, and they didn't subpoena any toll records, phone toll records from any Democratic members, that this somehow proves the partisan weaponization against Republicans and Donald Trump. So explain what's the difference between a toll record and a regular phone record and
a wiretap.
And a wiretap, as they're suggesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the only thing Smith got from the subpoena was a listing of phone numbers and times and the duration of particular calls involving the representatives who were subpoenaed. That's it. There was nothing that, unlike a wiretap, you get to hear what was said. What was discussed in those conversations, Smith absolutely did not get. And the reason that it only included Republicans was because part of the allegations that Smith made that Trump one of the things Trump did in furtherance of the conspiracy was, once the violence broke out, rather than trying to quell it, Trump manned the phone lines. He hit the phones, calling people, asking them to delay the Electoral College vote. And, you know, that was part of the unlawful acts by Trump. Well, Smith had to prove that those phone calls were made, and so he subpoenaed records that would provide, you know, documentation that Trump did indeed make such calls. Naturally, Trump didn't call any Democrats. He only called Republicans. And so only Republicans were subpoenaed. And it's as simple as that. It was part of dotting the T's, you know, and crossing the I's, as I like to say, of completing an investigation, that included conspiracy allegations, where the Republicans weren't accused of any wrongdoing, but they were essentially witnesses to what Trump did do. And all of that had to be documented for purposes of taking the case to trial.
Can that in any way be regarded as spying on those members, as a number of them are claiming that Jack Smith, the DOJ, Joe Biden's weaponized DOJ, was spying on members of Congress? So can that be regarded as spying in any way? And
not in the sense, when they use the word spying, they're trying to present the image that Smith was listening in on their private conversations, and that simply did not happen. And representing it in that way is horribly misleading.
How about the
idea? Dishonest, and they know it.
How about the idea that this is a violation of the Constitution's speech and debate clause, which essentially says that members of Congress cannot be questioned when they are carrying out their duty as members of Congress?
They weren't questioned, and the records weren't sought from the members of Congress. The records were sought from the telephone carriers, the companies. That's who was subpoenaed, not anybody in Congress. And that distinction, and they know that, and they understand that distinction means something. And when they subpoena, as Jack Smith pointed out, similar subpoenas were done by the first Trump administration. They didn't find any problem with those.
Now, there was about three or four main avenues of attack against Smith that Republicans repeatedly tried. And by the way, I should note, I think the hearing was actually kind of dull. There was not a lot of fireworks, it seems to me, which is a bit of a surprise on a committee chaired by Ohio's Jim Jordan, after all. But I think it's also reflective of how little Republicans seem to really have to try and use against Jack Smith.
Agreed.
And how weak their case really was, how, long ago debunked many of these points actually were. But Republicans attempted to argue that Trump was merely exercising his First Amendment rights, that he truly believed the election was stolen, and then by telling his supporters on the Ellipse and so forth on January 6th that the election was stolen, that he had every right to say as much, even if it ended up, resulted in them attacking the Capitol. But he can say anything he wants, and the fact that Jack Smith is going against his First Amendment rights. Don't we have free speech in this country anymore, Keith?
We do. But, free speech does not include the speech that is involved with committing a crime. Free speech does not include witness intimidation. Free speech does not include fraud. So Trump is free to stand, and Jack Smith said this, Trump is free to stand on his soapbox and scream to the world that the election was stolen from him. But when he turns that, when he turns the lie to trying to get, officials to do something wrongful, to do something corrupt, like trying to convince Raffensperger to find 11,000 votes, that's when it becomes a crime. When trying to convince his attorney general to lie to a state legislature about the status of their investigations into the election and falsely tell the state legislature that they have found fraud, then that is no longer exercising simply free speech. That is engaging in fraudulent activity that is aimed at frustrating the functions of government. And, you know, is perjury free speech? No, nobody would argue that. You know, false statements to government officials in the course of their official duties is a crime. It's, you know, violation of 18 U.S.C. section 1001. You know, a variety of people have been convicted for that sort of thing. And to include a lot of people in Trump's circle. So it's just not true.
He was very clear. And I think it was in the indictment itself. Smith was clear about that the president is free to lie about the election being stolen, but he can't use those lies to commit a crime. For example, I don't have First Amendment rights, I guess, to walk into a bank and say to the teller, this is a stick up, give me all your money. And if I get arrested for that, can I claim they're violating my free speech rights?
You know, let's take something simple, Brad. If I represent to you that my net worth is $10 million, okay? And I say that over a couple of beers or whatever, or even on this show, okay, that's protected by the First Amendment. If I tell my mortgage company that my net worth is $10 million, in order to secure a loan, that's mortgage fraud. And it's this, it can be the same lie. It's what you're doing it for.
And did they make any headway on that point as you saw it with Jack Smith when they were trying to? Because they actually, that First Amendment stuff, they kind of abandoned that pretty early. A few of them tried it early on, and then we never really heard anything else about it. So it didn't feel like they made any headway. Did you see any anything contrary to that?
And they wouldn't have made any headway with anybody who is fair-minded and understands even a little bit about what's being said. On the other hand, MAGAs probably, you know, lapped it up like the dumb little dogs they are, and are repeating it undoubtedly on social media even now, this whole thing should be a First Amendment case.
Several.
On the other hand, Jack Smith's statements before this committee supposedly justify a criminal case against Jack Smith, and he's got no free speech rights at all.
Which he does not seem to be concerned about. Here's Smith answering a question from, who is this, Rebecca Ballant, a Democrat of Vermont, regarding some of the attacks and Donald Trump calling for his prosecution.
I want to turn now to President Trump's attacks on you. Trump has a playbook for how he handles people who try to hold him accountable. In August 2023, right after your office indicted him, President Trump shared that playbook on social media for everyone to see. He wrote, "If you go after me, I'm coming for you." Trump has said that you, Mr. Smith, should be investigated and put in prison. He called you a disgrace to humanity, a radical left Marxist, a criminal. In fact, Trump has used the words deranged Jack Smith 185 times on Truth Social. How do you think that these statements have impacted you, your staff, and your investigation?
With respect to me, I think the statements are meant to intimidate me. I will not be intimidated. I think these statements are also made as a warning to others what will happen if they stand up. And I am, as I say, I'm not going to be intimidated. We did our work pursuant to department policy. We followed the facts and we followed the law. And that process resulted in proof beyond a reasonable doubt that he committed serious crimes. I'm not going to pretend that didn't happen because he's threatening me.
And Mr. Smith, do you believe that President Trump's Department of Justice will find some way to indict you?
I believe that they will do everything in their power to do that because they've been ordered to by the president.
That's very concerning, obviously. It's very concerning to all of us, at least on this side of the aisle.
concerning and extraordinary contrast from Jack Smith's own testimony about, you know, whether he was asked this time and again, you know, whether he was ever asked by the White House or Joe Biden or Merrick Garland to bring these charges against Donald Trump. And he repeatedly said no, he had absolutely no contact with them, and nobody seems to have, shown any evidence to the contrary. Let me get a thought from both of you before we get to a break here, and we'll come back with this disturbing ICE story, this new memo. But Desi Doyen, let me start with you here. Did America learn anything new from Thursday's public testimony of Jack Smith in the House Judiciary Committee? Will it otherwise make any difference in the hardened opinions of so many Americans, either for or against Trump at this point?
I doubt personally that it will have any effect on the MAGA crowd. It might, because they're already very hermetically sealed within their opinions about whatever Trump does. He is infallible and perfect and can do no wrong.
I didn't turn it over today to see if Fox News was running this testimony. Do you have any idea if they were?
I did not either, so I don't know. As far as independence, perhaps, I think that it might have helped to push some folks to recognize the broader implications of Republicans relying on insinuation and false assertions and allegations and even outright lies. And if you listened to the hearing, you heard those allegations and false assertions being debunked in real time with the Democrats and by Jack Smith. So really, it depends on what people hear in the media that they follow.
Keith Barber, you're a former Republican, as you like to say, a former lifelong Republican, at least until you weren't. From a Republican's point of view, watching this same testimony on Fox News or wherever they were seeing it, did they stand to learn anything new from Jack Smith's testimony on Thursday?
No, and as Desi was talking, I went to the Fox News website, and mm-hmm. you have to read down a while to even know that there was testimony today.
And
in fact, the headline on that isn't anything. It's watch former D.C. police officer get escorted out of Jack Smith hearing after fiery clash. So
That's the coverage on the front page of Fox News?
That is the top headline on that issue. Their top headline has to do with other things, to include ICE getting funded over the objections of some Democrats and Don Lemon not getting indicted and stuff like that. But so you have to read down to even find anything on Fox. The opinions of MAGAs on this are intractable. It's a cult. There's nothing you can do about it. Everybody else that's more open-minded, I think, has already decided that Trump is out to lunch on this. And I don't think that these hearings are going to move the needle all that much. It's interesting. There's this discussion of the Volume 2 hearings, bringing him back. It sure
bringing
seems
him back,
like...
To be clear, once and if... they finally release the report that Jack Smith filed regarding the other indictment, the stolen documents case down in Florida. And the Democrats at the end of today's hearing were already saying, we hope we will have more public hearings with Jack Smith when that report is finally made public, which should be in the next couple of weeks, I think.
It was supposed to be mid-February, but it's before the United States Court of Appeals now. We'll see what they rule. But, it's clear that Jack Smith feels that there is stuff in that report that could move the needle. I think he might be wrong, but we don't know. But he really wants to talk about that stuff, and you can tell he's frustrated that Judge Eileen Cannon says he can't.
Yep. Well, I'll bet you $5 that on that Fox News website, there's also nothing about the Epstein files.
Who?
Exactly.
Never heard of them. All right, let's take it. We got to do a break here. Keith Barber's going to stick around with us for another segment. I want to discuss that disturbing story that broke last night from the AP that Keith wrote about today at Daily Kos under the headline, Secret ICE Memo Trains Agents to Conduct Unconstitutional Home Invasions. Also, Desi Doyen, who never gets to leave, we'll have our latest Green News report a little bit later this hour. All of that straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Federal immigration officers are asserting sweeping power to forcibly enter people's homes without a judge's warrant, according to an internal ICE memo obtained by the Associated Press, marking a sharp reversal of longstanding guidance meant to respect constitutional limits on government searches. The memo authorizes ICE officers to use force to enter a residence based solely on a more narrow administrative warrant to arrest someone with a final order of removal, a move that advocates say collides with Fourth Amendment protections and upends years of both Supreme Court precedent and advice given to the migrant communities. For years, AP notes, immigrant advocates, legal aid groups, and local governments have urged people not to open their doors to immigration agents unless they are shown a warrant signed by a judge. That guidance is rooted in Supreme Court rulings that generally prohibit law enforcement from entering a home without judicial approval. But the ICE directive directly undercuts that advice at a time when arrests are accelerating under the administration's violent immigration crackdown in places like Minneapolis, now out in Maine, and a number of other, well, mostly or entirely democratically run cities that did not vote for Donald Trump in 2024. Perhaps equally disturbing, the memo itself has not been widely shared with the agency, according to a whistleblower complaint, but its contents have been used to train new officers who are being told to follow the memo's guidance instead of the written training materials that actually contradict this particular secret memo. It's signed by the acting director of ICE, a guy by the name of Todd Lyons. It's dated May 12 of 2025. So theoretically, they've been using this memo for months. It does not detail how this particular legal determination was actually made, nor what the legal repercussions might be regarding this memo. And it's very troubling. It's addressed to all ICE personnel, but it has only been shown to, quote, select DHS officials. This according to a couple of whistleblowers, and then those officials shared it with some employees who were told to read it and return it. One of the two whistleblowers in this story was allowed to view the memo only in the presence of a supervisor and then had to give it back. That person was not even allowed to take notes about this particular memo to all ICE agents. Very bizarre. Keith Barber, attorney at law, former Republican attorney, I should say, turned progressive Daily Coast writer, is still with us today. He wrote about this matter at the website today at Daily Coast. Keith, what the hell? I'm not even sure where to start here. We've seen video of ICE officers breaking down doors of private homes, dragging people out of bed into the streets in Minneapolis and elsewhere. Did the reporting on this, the existence of this memo, actually stun you as much as it did me when it came out last night?
It did, and it's very disturbing. And, you know, your own discussion of it has thought or prompted an additional thought on my part in that this has increased the violence, okay? Because mm-hmm. people in their homes believe the old rule. They yeah. believe what they've been taught, that they should keep their doors shut and not admit anyone in the absence of a judge-signed warrant. They're completely unaware that ICE agents are operating under a completely different rule that they've kept secret from even people in their own agency and certainly to the American public. And so people who are acting in good faith and saying, no, I'm not going to let you in, then suffer a violent intrusion into their home that maybe they wouldn't have done. You know, maybe they would have opened the door if they knew about this. So it's really concerning because of its, you know, increasing the level of violence associated with these things. And because of the secrecy involved in it. And it's also just wrong under the law. That is not what the Supreme Court in multiple cases and certainly a host of lower courts have ruled the Fourth Amendment allows.
Yeah, you argue in your coverage over at Daily Coast today of this story that all of this is well-settled law, that someone can be arrested on the street in a public space, you know, but to enter their home, a judicial warrant is needed. What's the difference between a judicial warrant and an administrative warrant, which apparently, according to the ICE memo, is now plenty to break down the door of an American home and drag people out in the middle of the night?
An administrative warrant is basically issued by the agency itself, by ICE. Okay, so there is no independent review on this. And it's I call it, you know, an Article II warrant because Article II is what the executive branch is. It is not the Article III warrant, which would be the judicial branch. And the entire idea of a warrant is to have a neutral and detached magistrate review whether or not probable cause for a search or seizure in a home exists. And instead, you're essentially having the police decide for themselves whether they think they've got probable cause. And that's, you know, that's exactly what the Fourth Amendment is intended to preclude. And it's got an interesting history that I discuss in my article, you know, going back into, you know, a British version, if you will, of administrative warrants that was abused. Of course, by, you know, colonial officials running America at the time. And the Fourth Amendment was intended to cure that. It was one of the things that that we wanted to put a stop to in this country. And now here we are going back in time.
Why is there a distinction in the law, in the Constitution, between, you know, arrests made in a public place versus a private space like a home? Why is that important to U.S. law and constitutional precedent?
Well, you know, the Constitution explicitly lists, you know, the right to be secure in one's home. And the United States Supreme Court, a case called Peyton versus New York, it wrote the following. The physical entry of the home is the chief evil against which the wording of the Fourth Amendment is directed. And, you know, and now, you know, deciding that chief evils are justified is not to be delegated to the branch seeking to commit the evil.
No, they've decided. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, and yet that is what is happening.
They've decided for themselves that it's fine. We can not only change the law, but we can give ourselves permission, essentially, to do whatever we want. They do not, or at least it's unclear where exactly the legal guidance for this memo even comes from. Is that why they won't actually release it publicly to anybody?
Yeah, I think that they knew that this would be controversial, that would prompt congressional hearings and review, which it undoubtedly will. I mean, there hasn't been time for that yet, but and certainly it's going to be added to the host of lawsuits they're piling up, you know, as a result of Department of Justice misconduct and ICE misconduct and invading homes and so forth, in saying that, you know, they just did this on their own. Not only without anybody meaningful reviewing it, but, you know, just keeping it secret from everybody.
Right. I mean,
that does suggest that they know that it is illegal and they want to make sure that nobody knows about it so they can't sue over it. They're trying to go with the because I said so defense, I guess.
Yeah, the fact that it's a memo to all members of ICE.
But not shown to anyone.
But not shown to them. And
if the ICE position was righteous or even defensible, they would not have concealed it. It's as simple as that.
As a former Republican, Keith Barber, isn't this the very thing, very literal thing that Republicans for decades now have been claiming, at least, you know, during Democratic administrations in any event, but that, you know, big government thugs,
jackbooted thugs,
whether they're Bill Clinton's or Barack Obama's or Joe Biden's, that they're going to break down the doors of homes in America, take us all away. And that, by the way, is why apparently they need semi-automatic weapons to fight off a tyrannical government from breaking into your homes. I mean, are Republicans who hear about this going to be troubled in any way by it?
Yep. The Republicans or the NRA types have at least for years been suggesting that this sort of thing is exactly what the Second Amendment is supposed to protect us against.
Yeah.
They have the wrong amendment. But but there is no doubt that the Constitution prohibits what this memo says they are doing.
And from what you know about your now former Republicans, I know you're down there in Florida, very Republican part of a very Republican state down in the Villages. If folks down there hear about this, and I doubt you can check Fox News website, I bet it's not at the top of the website either. But if they hear about this stuff, is this the kind of thing that changes at least Republicans' minds? I mean, because this seems to be, you know, the very thing they've been pretending to be terrified about for years now.
It does, but they no longer have beliefs of their own now that they hold independently. Okay. They believe whatever the cult leader tells them to believe now. And so from their perspective, since this is only being done to illegals, at least that's what they convince themselves, is that this is only being done to illegals, who cares?
And of course, we could show story after story where it's not only being done to what they call illegals, but it's being done to people who are here perfectly legally. It is being done to U.S. citizens. There was an elderly man out in, I think it was Minneapolis as well, who was dragged out in the middle of the night in the freezing cold in Minneapolis.
Frog marched in his bathrobe.
Yeah.
And they're also doing it
to... And he's a U.S. citizen.
And they're also doing it to non-white cops as well in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it was interesting that the cops in Minneapolis got upset about it, that you can't pull over our cops for no good reason. Okay, guys. But they are trying to do something about it. The cops, it seems, in Minneapolis are now the good guys trying to keep folks in Minneapolis safe from ICE. From being dragged out in the middle of the night in your bedclothes, now apparently with legal explanation that is secret and you can't learn anything about. Something's got to give here. This can't continue.
It is a very dangerous memo,
to say the least.
Yeah, if you read that article on COAST, I quote James Otis, a lawyer in 1760s America who argued against these writs of assistance that were kind of the English version of these administrative warrants. And it's frightening to read what he says would happen if these writs of assistance were deemed legal, because what he says would happen is what's happening.
Well, I got it right, but, you know, that was hundreds of years ago. We don't have to pay attention to him anymore, apparently. Unbelievable.
Yeah,
Keith Barber, known as Keith DB, when he writes pseudonymously over at dailycoast.com, where you can find his work. You can also find him on the Blue Skies at Keith DB. Keith, really appreciate you slogging through those Jack Smith hearings for us today and joining us to talk about them in short notice. Terribly helpful. Don't be surprised if we give you a call again if he comes back for part two when they release the Florida report.
Really interested to hear that.
Me too. Thanks, Keith. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one, Brad.
Thank you, sir. You too.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a quick break. And we're back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report because there's just not enough news to cover today, is there?
This is true. Always true.
Always true. You know, those family members say, well, at least you got a lot of stuff to cover. You never have to find content. Shut up.
Yes, that's what Colbert says. It's like asking a janitor. You must be so excited when someone has explosive diarrhea.
There you go. More explosive diarrhea right after a quick break. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Well, the upside about this freezing cold weather that is hitting much of the country is that the folks up in Minneapolis aren't troubled by it at all, but the ice agents really don't like the cold.
Yeah, that's too bad, isn't it?
Even though their name is ice. Anyway, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
The governor of Texas already activating emergency response resources, hoping to prevent a repeat of the devastating storm that led to widespread power outages back in 2021.
Polar vortex returns to slam much of the U.S. with extreme winter weather.
For much of the world, normal is gone.
New study warns of global water bankruptcy. Plus,
China makes almost all of the windmills, and yet I haven't been able to find any wind farms in China.
Donald Trump peddles intensely stupid lies about wind energy.
All of those stupid lies and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Why are we ending the wind farms that are now being built off the coast of the United States? We're ending them.
Because Trump is insane.
Al Gore wins again. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, right off the bat, we're starting with Trump's dumb lies, eh?
Yes, we are. In a rambling speech to global political and business leaders at the World Economic Forum in Davos this week, Donald Trump ridiculed the world's shift towards cheap, clean, renewable energy and peddled a barrage of intensely stupid lies about it. But he was more delusional than usual about wind energy, including a bizarre false claim that China, the world's largest producer of wind energy, has no wind farms. So, just a reminder, wind and solar are now the cheapest sources of energy in most of the world. China accounts for nearly half of all installed global wind energy capacity.
Really?
Dwarfing all other nations with nearly 7,000 domestic wind farms and even more under construction.
And yet, Donald Trump hasn't been able to find any of them?
Yes, I suspect he hasn't looked.
I see.
China is also the largest exporter of wind energy technology, profiting from selling to the world while Trump and congressional Republicans work to kill the U.S. wind energy industry. Meanwhile, over in Africa, following weeks of torrential rains, Mozambique is grappling with extreme flooding that has displaced more than 300,000 people, according to officials. Mozambique has been hit by increasingly frequent weather-related disasters that scientists say have been exacerbated by man-made climate change. Here in the U.S., as we go to air, weather forecasters warn that one of the most extreme winter storms in years is set to bring heavy ice, snow, and potentially record-breaking cold to much of the U.S. That's due in part to another outbreak of the polar vortex intruding far south. That is a phenomenon that used to be rare, but now occurs much more frequently. Linked to warming in the Arctic caused by man-made climate change, that can destabilize the polar vortex.
The Arctic gets warmer, all of that cold air gets pushed down to, well, all the way to Texas.
Yes, it disrupts the jet stream that drives weather systems across the United States. The storm could also seriously challenge the U.S. electric grid, heavily reliant on a constant flow of natural gas with pipelines and power plants that are vulnerable to extreme cold, as we saw in the deadly Texas blackout in 2021. According to new data from the Federal Energy Information Administration this week, in each of the last 4 years, severe winter storms have caused the biggest interruptions in natural gas supplies and electricity.
How does solar do when it gets cold?
Solar does just fine, especially when it's combined with batteries.
Huh, go figure.
In science, the world has entered an era of global water bankruptcy caused by decades of over-extraction of water reserves, as well as shrinking supplies from lakes, rivers, glaciers, and wetlands due to climate change. The bracing new study from the United Nations University Institute for Water found that most countries are using up water faster than it can be replenished and are even destroying long-term stores of water that are held in aquifers and wetlands. Nearly three-quarters of the world population lives in regions classified as water insecure, which has major implications for geopolitical stability. The report lists solutions for governments to fundamentally reset their water management and reduce overuse and pollution. Here's lead study author Dr. Gavi Madani.
Today is not despair. It's clarity. The earlier we face the real balance sheet, the more options we still have. The longer we delay, the more we convert manageable stress into irreversible losses around the world.
Well, there's an optimistic guy.
Well, what gets measured gets managed, mm-hmm. and the world desperately needs it.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Lots of information there. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Indeed.
Thanks to our guest today, Keith Barber of Daily Coast. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we've done since the beginning of time, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. That's made possible by those of you who hit a donate button there or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on social medias at TheBradBlog. Hope to see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.